right. Welcome, everyone. Hey, anybody out on the panel, give me a thumbs up so that I know you can hear me out there. Excellent. Thanks, everyone. Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining. This is the second of three of what we call our New World IT Governance Webinar Series. So just a quick background. You were probably here last week, but if not, just wanted to tell you a real background on this. The experts that are on this panel, these are folks that get together at every conference. We talk at different training events and so on. And we get a chance to chat about some of our thoughts around current trends and those types of things. But since we don't get a chance to do that face-to-face at conferences, we thought we'd share some of our conversations with you live on a series of webinars. So we appreciate you guys joining. And the experts you'll hear from today, of course, we're colleagues. In the last several years, we've been doing these face-to-face, but we want to make sure that you get a chance to hear some thoughts from what I believe and what everybody here on this panel believes are some of the top influencers in our industry today. So we want to share this with you. And our topic today is there's no such thing as post-pandemic cybersecurity. So these top professionals are going to offer some practical tips and, of course, discussion on the post-pandemic cybersecurity environment. So this comes really, really nicely right after the privacy conversation that we had last Wednesday. And what we'll do is once we finish up the cybersecurity conversation today, next Wednesday, we'll be talking about the IT governance systems and really wrapping this stuff up with how we might think through governance systems and frameworks and those types of things that might be able to help you in a post-pandemic type of environment. So I'm not going to waste much more of your time. Let's walk through and talk about the panelists. You guys know most of these folks. Mark Thomas here. I'm talking to you from the United States. Ramses is talking to us from the country of Spain. You probably see him all over the internet these days. We have Alan Boardman talking to us from the UK, from London. Now, Dirk is from Belgium, but Dirk had a conflict and could not make it today, but we're looking forward to hearing some of his thoughts on governance frameworks next week. Ed's talking to us from the USA in the state of Ohio. We've got Veronica talking to us from Kenya. Elaine from France, but he's talking to us today from the Ivory Coast. We've got Opiemi from Nigeria. Dr. Ramsey from the country of Jordan, as well as Dina from Jordan, and Kaya is talking to us from Turkey. So we don't need to waste a whole lot of your time talking through who's out here. You know everybody. We're going to jump in and give some ground rules right off the bat, and then we'll start jumping into some questions. First thing is, if you have any questions, go out to the Q&A section and put the questions out there. I can't guarantee we'll get to all of them. However, if there's a question that you'd like to have for a specific panelist, put their name on the Q&A section so the panelists can see that and they can answer that question for you. If not, I'll try to moderate those and get most of the questions in there for you. We may not get to every one of them because we want to make sure that we get through all of the key points that these experts want to get through for you guys today. Like always, we're going to try to get this recording done and at least get part of this out to you guys afterwards if you missed this. All right, guys, so I'm not going to waste much more time. Let's go right in to the first question. Now, here's what's interesting. You know, last week we talked about privacy, and we had some really, really good discussion and advice on privacy. Now, we really kind of said there's this balance between conformance and performance. But since we're talking about cybersecurity today, is there a point where security can go too far and compromise our privacy, or is it just the opposite? Is there a balance, or what do you guys think about this? So, hey, I'm going to jump off. This is a good starting point for Alan and Ed. You guys have a lot of opinions in this matter. Why don't you guys take it away?
Alan, do you want to start? Because I know that I have my feelings on this one.
Yeah, so I'm going to kick it off. Really great to be here. Thank you, Mark. So, I mean, I think if we think about, compliance, people tend to think about in terms of regulations, but it's not just regulations, it's internal processes as well. And, we kind of think that it's more of a kind of tick box exercise, you know, the rule says this or the policy says that, and you follow the policy. Maturity, you know, we see much more of degrees of things, and it's got to be risk-based. So, you know, we really have to move from a compliance-based approach, much more to a maturity, a risk-based approach. So I'm going to stop there, but I'd like to come in again later on. But for me, we really need to shift the dial from being purely compliance-based through to be much more following a risk-based approach for our cybersecurity.
And Alan, I'm going to follow up on that. And I absolutely agree. We definitely need a risk-based approach. We've got to get out of the sole focus on compliance. But to answer the question specifically, can security go too far? Absolutely. We see this quite often. You know, we can lock those systems down to the nth degree. We can make them the most secure systems. We can put them behind vaults. But the reality is at that point, you can't use them. At the same point, we do need to move away from that standard checkbox approach where, you know, we're only focused on what the auditors are telling us and saying, you know, we have to move away from that. I know when I was getting ready for another panel that I was a part of, one of the things that we did was take a look out and see what some of the threat actors were doing in cyberspace. And one of the things that we saw right as the pandemic was picking up steam was various threat actor groups were recycling their existing infrastructure, and they were registering COVID-19 and coronavirus related domains almost to the tune of 300 and some thousand individual domains. And those, I can only guess, are not being used for good. So we do have to make sure we're thinking about security, but at the same time, not at the ability or at the expense of being able to do our normal jobs.
Wow, and that happened pretty quickly too. They didn't waste any time registering those domains. Ed, you and I talked about this last week.
Oh yes, they it was a matter of a few weeks that this went from a very few domains to blossoming to over 300. I was sitting back talking with a couple of colleagues of mine about this, and was like, why are these starting to take effect, and why are they becoming more prevalent? And our theory that we came up with was, well, even during a pandemic, a criminal's got a criminal. They've got to figure out a way to make money. They've got to figure out a way to generate revenue just the same way as everybody else. As it turns out, the cyber criminals are looking at exploiting our concerns, our fears when it comes to COVID, and they're going to make money off of that any way possible.
You know, it's interesting kind of talking about the balance between performance and conformance. You know, I had a CEO that made the comment, this is pre-pandemic. We were having some very, very turbulent business things take place. And he slaps his hand on the table and he says, why are we losing business? We're the most secured company in the world. And I thought that was amazing because we were so overly secured. And I can say that now because I'm not there anymore, that we couldn't perform as an enterprise. And I think that's what kind of concerns me. And one of the reasons why we wanted to talk about this today is because, you know, with privacy in the balance now and post-pandemic, right? And I believe Ramsey has said last time, or several of the panelists said last time, hey, this new normal, we have just made decisions on privacy, right, that are going to drive some of the security measures that we're going to have in place. And I think we want to go back, Alan, you might have had some follow-up on that too.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, we talk about the new normal, you know, things are going to change, things are changing. And, you know, we do need to make sure we take this opportunity to have another look at how we approach this. And it's really got to be based on doing, you know, risk assessments, understanding what our most critical assets are, but also understanding the threats, the threat actors, the threat landscape, and being very clear on where we may be caught up in this. Sometimes we may be, you know, direct line of fire, sometimes we may be collateral damage. So it really is an opportunity during this time to understand, you know, what's gone well, where we struggled, and make sure we're tightening those control areas where we've been lacking.
No, I completely agree with you on that. And you know what's interesting on the cybersecurity, one of the things that I wanted to kind of push into as well is, you know, there is a big effort towards being more secure, and we have to maintain privacy as well. But if I were a CISO, or if I'm in the cybersecurity space right now, I'd be really trying to figure out, what is my focus right now? Is my focus more on compliance, or is my focus more on being a mature organization? Again, there's a balance there between being mature and being compliant. Any thoughts on that, you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think, Mark, you're talking about balance. It is really a balance. But there are lots of very good models out there, and organizations really need to go down this maturity approach, understanding across a number of domains how well their processes, their preparedness, their approaches, their behaviors stack up against that. So they've got to follow some type of maturity model, which takes them back again to following a risk-based approach, as opposed to just being purely compliance or conformance approach-based.
See, and I'm gonna jump on here real quick. So I totally agree. We should be more mature. However, in the middle of a crisis, is that really the time to be putting the tires on the car? I've got a number of folks that we're working with, and they just want to make sure the lights are on, the doors open, and they're still as secure as possible. So trying to implement new concepts and new ideas, I think we have to approach this a little bit more differently than we would have 3, 4, 5, 6 months ago. I think we have to maybe do a little subversive or guerrilla information security and raise that awareness level and maybe implement the processes and procedures with not so much the permission, but asking for forgiveness after the fact. I mean, it's one of those things. We've got to keep the lights on and doors open, yes, but not at the expense of our customer privacy, our organizations, and coming to them with some of these new radical ideas. And let's be honest, a lot of these organizations, when you start talking capability, maturity, and enhancing those, they're going to look at you like, I've got more pressing things in the middle of a global pandemic to worry about than if we have strong policies and procedures in place. I'll get off the soapbox now.
Mark, if I may, this is Ramses here. I want to bring a new angle or a new dimension to this topic, if I may. Because I see, of course, you have to be compliant with the law, no questions asked. I mean, of course, you have to abide by the law. However, to your question, I think that there's a cause-effect relationship, meaning, especially in this pandemic epoch, in this COVID-19 era that we are living, I mean, focusing on being more mature, focusing on as a CISO or a security manager or compliance director, I mean, making sure that the right people is accessing the right assets, or making sure that they are who they say they are, or encrypting. So again, let me bring this dimension on. There's a cause effect relationship on being even more mature, more robust and solid in cybersecurity. I feel that it will make you more compliance with GDPR and the rest of the legislation, right? I understand that there's the balance that Alan was mentioning, and of course, absolutely agree. But I see that if I get, let me put it this way, positively obsessed. I mean, being obsessed is not okay, but if you are positively obsessed somehow, if you're obsessed with, okay, let's make it stronger, more robust, more solid, I feel that in a court of law, you would say, hey, Your Honor, I mean, that was a work in progress. I mean, I strengthened the cybersecurity and my maturity because actually I wanted to be more compliant with the law. I think that cause effect relationship is on my mind as I am seeing companies around the world right now.
That's a great point. And you're talking about companies around the world, which is going to take me to my next question. However, I do want to ask you guys a question. This is technical on Zoom, if you don't mind. When I was going through, I accidentally clicked this thing that got rid of my control panel. And I'm not sure people could see your faces as you talk. Can people see faces as you talk out there on the screen? I'm not sure. Okay, so I just want to make sure, because on my screen, since I'm sharing my screen, I can't see it. Okay, got a question.
They say
I got
yes.
An answer.
Mark,
that said you can.
Mark, they are seeing yes. Okay.
Excellent. I just want to make sure people could see your smiling faces as you guys were giving answers. Now, that takes me to this point. Thank you, everybody, for the positives on that. This is a global panel. Right. And one of the things that we as professionals, all of us have shared at conferences and calls is what's taking place in our regions and some of our thoughts about that. What I'd like to do is we have a lot of regions covered in this panel. What about any cybersecurity inhibitors right? Because we're talking about post-pandemic and even current pandemic in the regions that you guys are dealing with right now. So what I want to do is I want to start in the country of Jordan with Dr. Ramsey and Dina, if you don't mind.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. Actually, before talking about inhibitors or challenges, I would like really to talk about the progress that has been done by many regulatory bodies and governments in the Middle East and GCC region. Eventually, we have right now back in the MENA and GCC region a cyber law. In addition to cyber requirements by central banks for financial institutions and as well for the banking industry. That mandates to have a cybersecurity program, incident response plan, a cybersecurity strategy as well. That mandates awareness. And in addition to a commitment from the top management and from the board, we have many committees that oversees this program, the cybersecurity program, resilience programs that we have in those regions, and eventually many as well executive management and C-level directors are engaged in this programs. The cybersecurity attacks is increasing rapidly, especially recently from our cybersecurity operations center. The recent statistics demonstrate that attacks has been increased by 50% since March until the present day, due to coronavirus situation that we have globally, and mainly in the region. And most of those attacks are relevant to denial of service attacks, phishing attacks, and also malware infection under the name of coronavirus or COVID-19 as well. For inhibitors, I guess Dina can give us more about this site.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Ramsey. Actually, talking about cybersecurity inhibitors, first of all, I'd like to mention that cybersecurity in the region is still suffering from serious deficiency in terms of experienced people. Countries including Jordan are still working to develop new methods to attract, educate, and retain individuals and build the required skills for those individuals that will be able to carry their duties in this domain. Second, the awareness programs related to the cybersecurity threats. They have started, but still need to be enhanced because of the rapidly changing environment. In addition, the organizations are aware that security awareness trainings is not a one-shot approach. It must be repetitive, updated, and constantly tested. One more challenge is related to the funding of the cybersecurity programs in the organization. This is related to the high cost of acquiring and implementing security solutions. And we are all aware that currently, due to the cutting cost strategies in this pandemic environment, we have this big challenge in the region. In brief, although we have many constraints and challenges, but in general, the organizations are trying their best to comply with the regulations and ensure that their organizations are safe.
Let's go to Turkey next. What are you guys seeing down there? Anything different?
Well, I think it's in terms of cybersecurity, first of all, there's a balance, and the balance is dynamic. It's changing. I read an article this week about a Washington Post reporter that published a lot of the stuff that Edward Snowden released and all the crazy things that happened to him. So, on one hand, if somebody's doing something that causes them, a nation state, to be interested in them, there's really nothing they can do to protect themselves. I think the issue is that so many people see examples like that, how a nation state has targeted specific people with an advanced persistent threat, and there's really nothing that person can do to protect themselves against that kind of an attack. And they just say, well, if I can't protect myself, why should I even care? Why should I even do anything? And it isn't quite like that. It's like if I'm in a herd of cows running away from a wolf, I don't have to be the fastest cow in the herd. I just have to be the second slowest cow in the herd to get out. So, it really comes down to, what are we a target? What is the risk? As Alan mentioned in the beginning of this session, I mean, really knowing the level of risk that we're dealing with and taking precautions, to deal with that, to address that risk is really important. Now, this Washington Post reporter, I mean, he got the Washington Post to you know, buy secure servers for him to create a special room where he would work. He had to basically get rid of his phones. He was a single guy on a dating app that had all these beautiful women trying to hit on him out of the blue, really kind of crazy stuff. So it's really, you know, we just have to look at our risk level and what we're dealing with and kind of, you know, set ourselves up accordingly. And it's, there's no way one person can know it all. It's just impossible at this point. So it's important to have good colleagues, smart colleagues that we can consult with out there to address whatever's going on.
Yeah,
I'm seeing, you know, that's the good news. The bad news is I live in a jurisdiction where, unfortunately, knowledge sharing can get people in jail. So it's a challenge. It's a challenge both ways, just to protect ourselves and not to be doing things that might have us run afoul of present regulations where we're living or where we're operating.
Makes sense. Hey, let's go into Africa. Let's go down to Nigeria. What are you guys thinking? What's happening in Nigeria with this stuff right now?
Yeah, so thank you, Mark, and fellow panelists. I like to identify with what is going on in the Middle East, you know, talking about people's skills and competencies, especially because of attractiveness, you know, of our skills by nations like Canada, like UK, you know, high skills, immigration programs going on. And so we see a lot of brain drain going on. And when I check my LinkedIn profile and I see my former colleagues who are no longer in the region, so I know that that is very bad for the continent. So that is one. And also the cost of the economic cost of services, infrastructure, and applications around cybersecurity is also there. You know, the implication of that is that we set our risk appetite too high because look at the cost benefits. And we don't want to spend 1 billion naira or $1 billion protecting a 1 million asset. So you look at that, and you know, instead of buying a $10 lock to protect a $1 bicycle, you just leave the bicycle to exposure. So that is part of the problem that we have. And also the government, the lack of awareness among policymakers. No, we don't really have agencies that are accountable for cybersecurity, no, saying that who's actually answerable for cybersecurity within the region. So what you find is individual efforts, industry efforts, and institutional efforts. But I think that is changing gradually. Governments are beginning to set up some frameworks, some laws, some regulations, some bills, but they're still in their infancy. So and I think that's a major challenge in terms of modifying behavior and driving maturity around cybersecurity in this region.
Yeah, well, we've got Elaine just right down the road from you in Ivory Coast. Similar circumstances there or something different?
Oh, it's quite different. As I mentioned, the first webinar, we are a French-speaking country in Ivory Coast, and we have inherited a lot of the issues presented by French people, meaning we don't like to follow the rules. So we contest everything. So first of all, when you put in place, so it's really a matter of culture. When you put in place policies, nobody wants to follow the rule, and everybody tries to find a way to go aside the policy, to find a shortcut. So this is the first thing. And it's always about culture. It's about culture also because a few years ago, I had to conduct an audit for a very, very big organization here in Western Africa. And when I asked, what about cybersecurity to the HR VP, the guy said, cybersecurity, we are not concerned. I said, oh, why? Because we are too small and nobody wants to hack us. There is no interest to do that. Okay. And he said, on top of that, it never arrived. So why should it arrive now? I said, okay. And what about people? Do you Do you make some awareness training session? No, no, we have other priorities, you know, and however, God protects us. So it's clear that we have now the first inhibitor, probably, and this is the culture in these countries where nobody feels that cybersecurity should be a threat. And the second one, as it was mentioned by OPME, it's also about costs. We don't have a lot of money in these countries. And when we invest money, it's to have a direct return on the investment. And there is no direct return. You are just mitigating a risk. And here, we are not, it's also cultural, we are not very... very interested in risk. Risk is something negative. So don't talk about risk, never. And this is typically probably the greatest inhibitor in Western Africa, French-speaking countries. And it's the same in France, more or less.
Interesting. So we heard from Nigeria. We heard from Ivory Coast. Let's go to the other side, over to Kenya. Veronica, are you seeing anything different on the Kenya side from what we heard from Nigeria and Ivory Coast?
Thank you, Mark. In Kenya, we have the National Cybersecurity Response Team that was established by our Communications Authority. So we are trying to reach out to the. They are trying to actually do a lot of awareness to people and different organizations. So like my colleagues have mentioned, still cost is an issue because most stakeholders would prefer to invest in other things that are not, that will return investments compared to, that will bring profits quickly compared to something that they're not sure whether they'll even be hacked at some point or either they're already hacked. So our National Cybersecurity Response Team is trying hard to create awareness across, but with the cost is still an issue on the issue of cybersecurity. Thank you.
Yep, yeah, let's go north of you. Let's go to the EU. I've got Ramses and Alan. What do you guys think up in the EU?
Okay, thank you, Mark. You know, as an inhibitor, I see very clear, you know, the triad: culture, structure, and strategy. Meaning, of course, my colleagues have also applied to culture. It's important in terms of regions and in terms of the way we do security, etc. But what happened with structure, meaning where does security report into? Sometimes it's operations, sometimes it's legal. So in this overnight pandemic thing, in this overnight lockdown, confinement, everybody working from home, etc. I think that not only culture, but structure is a very special inhibitor. And last but not least, strategy. I think it's a very important discussion, Mark and my colleagues and attendees, on, I mean, what was the strategy of the company? Decentralized? Oh, you're in trouble then because everybody is, boom, spread it all over the place. Or centralized, where you need to go, you know, through your non-existent VPN sometimes. You need to go back to the headquarters and then go to the internet. So it is amazing how technology plays an instrumental role in this, again, overnight situation. So my answer would be, Mark, and I think that's a hell of a conversation. So as an inhibitor, culture, of course, structure, and then strategy, right? And that triangle and whatever you take it from, I think it's very important. And of course, technology plays an instrumental role. And as we will move forward with the session, I have to say something on, you know, cybersecurity and programs and the, by the way, let me put it now and then we'll talk about it later. I mean, it's a very visual concept is the surface of attack. Let me say now and then we will cover it later. The surface of attack has expanded, has amplified. You are at your home, I am at my home, Alan is at home in London. You know, so suddenly for cyber criminals, the surface of attack has just amplified, which is great for them, but for us, you know. So as an inhibitor, I think that's a very interesting and very visual concept that we need to understand. Yeah, back to you.
Yeah, and just very briefly, and totally agree with Ramses there, you know, in terms of your triad, but also your surface of attack. It's almost like a perfect storm. IP address range that these attackers now have to access
you know, used to be limited to kind of corporations and maybe some home users. Now it's just been totally amplified. But just to answer the question in terms of the inhibitors, I think as with most of the panelists have said, you know, money, skills, resources, awareness, you know, all of the above, particularly because the UK is kind of quite high up on the list of attacks. I mean, some research has come out recently in terms of the kind of phishing emails and that, you know, it's in the top two or three in terms of these emails coming in and attacks, ransomware, etc. You know, why is that happening? I guess there's a lot of research being carried out at some of the, you know, universities, Oxford, things like that. Some of these attackers probably are trying to get to, you know, some of this sensitive information, some of this quite critical information. So, and a lot of other organizations and are getting caught up in the collateral damage. So, you know, key inhibitor for me is, again, the skills piece. The UK government has just released a service for reporting suspicious emails. You know, great initiative, but I bet my bottom dollar, they totally swamped, because, you know, I've personally submitted at least 10 in the last 2 weeks. You know, and if everybody's doing that, I don't know how they're ever going to follow these things up. I mean, I guess they were using big data to analyze and look for patterns and things. But yeah, you know, the resources at the moment are being squeezed all over.
That makes a lot of sense. Hey, guys, I'm going to go ahead and move on. I think that was excellent. Again, a great rundown of what's taking place across the globe. But let's jump operational here for a few minutes. And this next question is something that we're hearing a lot right now because, of course, we talk privacy. Now we're talking cybersecurity. If I'm a CISO, I may sometimes be at odds with privacy in many cases. So here's my next question to you guys. Is this current pandemic creating any friction between the privacy and the security chiefs in an organization? If so, is there anything we can do to make sure that this relationship between these two roles can be more efficient? I'm expecting this to last for 6 hours, but I have to cut you down to about 15 to 20 minutes. So I know I've got a couple people out there who are extremely concerned about this and have a lot of information on this. So let's jump out. Let's start with Ramses. Ramses, and I want to go to Ed to do a follow-up on this, if you don't mind.
All right. Yeah, I will be brief because, as you say, we can talk, anyone here can talk for hours on this, but the answer is a big yes, period. I mean, yes. I mean, is there a friction? Oh, you bet. But let me explain why. Because suddenly, again, as I was just saying some minutes ago, overnight, I mean, companies around the world have outsourced their endpoint, meaning, of course, I have my corporate PC and I have all of the things, right? But suddenly, you know, I use my Mac and then the tablet. So it has been, and I put it between inverted commas, of course, but it's an outsourced environment that I'm using, right? And sometimes I'm using non-approved, non-sanctioned tools, you know? I mean, sometimes it's this shared folder in the cloud in order to transfer a couple of services because it's more convenient from the operating system I'm using. So, and that suddenly creates a friction between privacy and the security chiefs, because the security chiefs and, again, compliance officers and risk directors that are hearing us today, I mean, probably they're smiling saying, yeah, but my job has not changed. Well, quite on the contrary, it has multiplied. So the duties of protect and defend have not changed. Actually, they have multiplied. So while that duty has not changed, the context certainly has changed. Again, outsourced endpoints and non-sanctioned tools and devices. So the answer is a yes. On identity and access management, governance, control, I mean, the duties are exactly the same. Make sure that people are who they say they are when they are accessing the clouds, in plural, by the way, clouds in plural, not just one cloud, and other things, right? So I see that cyber criminals are using this as I call it the big gap, you know? So if the context has amplified and the surface of attack has amplified, for them, cyber criminals, it's a big gap. That's fantastic. It's a dream. Because now suddenly hundreds, if not thousands of millions of people are working from a non-approved, non-sanctioned devices. In short, we have been throwing, and I say with all due respect, but we have been throwing technology at the endpoint, at networks. We have been throwing cybersecurity solutions, and I have to celebrate that because I work in a vendor, right? We sell things. But we have been throwing things into networks and companies, and now suddenly, boom, overnight, it's not that network anymore. It's me at my home with my DSL connection or my satellite connection or whatever. So the answer to the question on screen, Mark, yes, yes, yes.
So I, not only the question on screen, but I accidentally just popped up a meeting request, so everybody saw that. So my apologies for that. But I'm going to jump to you, Ed. I think you have some similar or other comments that you might have on that one.
Well, yeah, and I, you know, you bring up the unauthorized use of applications and clouds from home. Ramses, it's 2020. We all familiar with shadow IT. We know this is going on all the time. So that's nothing new about. But Mark, you're lucky you're asking this question in a virtual format, because the question of, you know, friction between the privacy and security officers, I've seen conferences where folks have almost come to blows over this role. You know, and when we look at it, this is one of those things that I think that the pandemic has actually had a little bit of good, because even though there's always been friction between the two, we still now have to focus on protecting our organizations, making sure our consumers are taken care of, making sure our customers are taken care of. One of the big problems that we've always had with this friction between privacy and security officers is the business's perception of the two. Normally, the privacy officer is viewed as being more business aligned because they're tied directly back to regulatory and statutory requirements, whereas the CISO is viewed and relegated as to being a component of information technology. And that's one of those things that always gets me commercially is when I point out that, you know, the I in CISO is not for the I of Ed, but actually for information, and that information resides in digital form, hard copy, and gray matter. So I think that this pandemic is going to push those two, and we may see an actual convergence of the privacy and the chief information security officer, or the absorption of one into the other. As we see more organizations and more laws come out that are driving privacy to the new levels, I just think this is going to be something that's going to continue for a while. But that friction, until somebody steps in and makes the two play nice together, I think that friction's still going to be there.
Yeah, that makes sense. What are we seeing in other regions? This, if there is any friction between cybersecurity and privacy, any other thoughts out there on that one?
I mean, I'd like to speak about a client of mine. I mean, it's they do patent and trademark registrations, and they have had to go to a completely virtual environment, everybody working from home. And one of their clients has said, well, do you have 27001? At which point they called me up and they said, hey, you know, can you help us with this? Yeah, sure, I can help you. Yeah, okay, what do we need to do? Well, one of the first things on the list is using complex passwords or multi-factor authentication. So before we even started doing a consulting project, they forced everybody to change and use complex passwords. And the whole company was up in arms. Why are you forcing us to use a difficult password? And, you know, how can we do this? And it's just, it's balance. It's like a dance almost. And I don't know that there's a one size fits all answer to this. Each organization, I think, has its own requirements, has its own needs. And it's not it doesn't stay the same. It's not a static situation. It's continually changing. So as the environment changes, people need to change their approach to this. Most people don't like things that change. They want something to stay the same. So that's really the challenge, continually getting people to change their worldview about a given situation, which I think it's something we all grapple with to a greater or lesser extent.
That makes sense. Hey, just real quick, I know we're talking the cybersecurity and privacy balance, but I did get an interesting question out there, and somebody clearly from the insurance area, and you guys might have seen one of these questions pop up that said, hey, you know, when it comes to cybersecurity insurance, are we seeing anything different from an insurance perspective? Because risk has come up. One of the forms of risk is to transfer risk with cybersecurity insurance. Is there an effect on cybersecurity insurance right now with the pandemic? Are you guys seeing anything from that perspective?
Mark, if I may, very quick, I was actually answering the question, but I can tell you for a fact, and I know, Mark, that insurance companies are rethinking their strategy and their policies. They have already told the writers, and that's the role, by the way, for people who actually write policies in the insurance companies, that's the role, the writers, to pay a lot of attention to the situation, especially in the pandemic, and to be very careful with what they write and how the policy is issued and etc. Because they can be found in a huge problem if all of the angles and dimensions are not fully considered. So again, let me go back to my statement before. In a home working, remote working, non-approved, non-sanctioned situation, different clouds, different tools, different outsourced endpoints at home, wow, how are you going to make sure that the insurance policy is fair, that it's economically viable, right? So it is. I mean, they have told their people to be absolutely vigilant to the evolution, to the situation, to make sure that the right countermeasures are in place. And if they're not, then the policy will be, you know, through the roof in terms of money. So not economically viable. So I think that the question is a very good one, because it shows that, oh my Lord, I mean, we didn't see that coming. We didn't see that coming. And suddenly we need to rethink our strategy. So that's a very important question.
Yeah, very good. Okay, guys, go ahead, Ed.
I was going to jump on there, and Ramses, you hit it great. Yeah, because having worked with some of the larger insurance companies across the globe, their common practice of deny, delay, and defer is definitely going to come into play when they look at some of these claims coming in. And that is definitely going to drive, you know, future areas. And let's be honest, when it comes to cybersecurity insurance, they don't have the same level of actuarial data they do everywhere else. I've seen insurance carriers, and I'll keep them nameless, that have denied claims because when they've had to had a insured body that has submitted a claim, they've gone back to that initial scoping questionnaire that the client had to fill out and say, yes, we're doing all these things. They found we weren't doing training for all of our employees, and they totally nullified the claim. So I think, you know, as the pandemic continues on, you know, especially when we talk about the cyber aspect where we're seeing an uptick in phishing, I think cyber insurers are going to get very distant and very cautious about who they're insuring at present. And I think you're right. They are going to definitely rethink their strategy moving forward.
Well, that's interesting. You know, I had a client of mine who in the last 12 months was in a newsworthy event in which PII was exposed. And I was talking to him. He was the CISO of this organization. And he told me that once this event kind of cleared out, they went to make insurance claims because they had insurance for this type of thing. And he was told by his insurance organization that, hey, we learned about your exposure on the news. Now, contractually, you were supposed to have us involved in this process, and you were supposed to communicate with us, but we heard about it on the news. You just violated our contract. Sorry, we're not supporting you on this. So there's a lot of stuff taking place on that. Hey, guys, I know we could be on this one for a little bit, but I want to make sure that we hit that question out there for the listeners. Now, I'm going to move on to this next question because I want to jump in a few minutes for anybody out there who's an auditor. We're going to get to some auditing questions here in a couple of seconds. But first, let's hit this. What do you guys think? Let me move the question here for you. What do you guys think are some of the long-term effects of COVID-19 in relation to cybersecurity? What would you suggest that organizations start looking at or thinking about right now? I got a couple people in my mind. I have Kaya and Elaine that I'd like to jump to first on this.
I think, I mean, the biggest change is that people are working remotely, what I'm seeing. And organizations are seeing that they don't need to be spending a ton of money on paying office rent. People can work remotely and still do their jobs. So the way of working has changed, clearly. As people work remotely, clearly cybersecurity issues become more important. When there's remote access to systems, it just needs to be more secure. And that's the big challenge. I think most people right now are having a lot of trouble with the whole, you know, getting the tools they need together for remote working, whether it's WebEx, Zoom, Google Meetings, or whatever. I mean, there's a lot of tools out there. So picking the right tools and implementing them and getting people to use them with some fundamental level of security is kind of the challenge. But I think the ways of working is what has changed dramatically. As a result of that, security needs are growing and evolving. And I don't know where it's going to end, but clearly remote work is here to stay.
All right, can I jump in?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think it's important that we understand the perimetization, so the perimeter of cybersecurity networks now are extended. So there's extended enterprise. Now the network is extended to people's homes. As a cybersecurity professional, you know, what is the scope of what of your assets, of the information assets of the organization that needs to be protected? Okay, so and at that end, at the homes, what are the network access controls that needs to be put in place? You know, you talk about device vulnerabilities, how would they be managed going forward? You know, software updates and all of that. In my region, for example, you know, the cost of data is quite huge. So you see people trying to save on data by not updating their systems. Okay, and that means that systems will not be patched. And then you talk about bring your own device and all of that. You know, what is the standard, the admin standards? How do you enforce them? So what are the implications for data leakage when you're talking about transmission, data at rest, data in process, and data in transmission? So all of these issues, you know, will mean that there may be a need for new encryption technologies, you know, that are easy to use and easier to enforce. So these are some of the changes that needs to happen to the security architecture of most organizations as we move into the world, the new world order.
You know, it's interesting. We talk about new worlds, right? So everyone's gone virtual. Heck, I'm still trying to figure out how to learn Zoom, Microsoft Teams. There's so many. I learned about a new one today called Fuse, right? So there's a lot of different things out there. So are there any top tips that are out there? Because we're trying to figure out how we manage this from a cybersecurity perspective. Of course, you guys know Zoom made the news about all kinds of stuff, and they got put into the spotlight way before they ever wanted to. But what would you say in these times of video conference, remote working? Veronica, I'm going to start over with you. What are some tips out there for organizations that are going remote like this?
Thank you, Mark. At the moment, we are having quite a number of tools that we are using, but I'd like our users to make sure your video conferencing software is patched with the latest vendor provided updates, and also ensure that the automated updates are turned on. Because as human beings, some things you may forget, but if they are turned on, they may update automatically. Also, organizations should not assume that everyone knows how to use these tools. So on matters concerning security, ensure that users are trained on how to securely use the remote working tools, and to also be able to detect phishing attacks in case they see any links that are being shared during the video conferencing sessions. Because everyone is not tech smart. And also, I would also advise organizations to review the non-disclosure agreements in regards to security controls with their vendors. Because at the end of the day, most meetings are recorded. But how confidential are these recordings? How are they shared? Some are shared on, are saved on cloud, others are on your machine, but how secure are they? So if you review the non-disclosure agreement, maybe it will bring up some level of confidentiality with the kind of information that is shared while using those tools. Then also, I'll advise to review your security settings on every application that you may have downloaded on your machine, or you're using, or your company has approved. Ensure that the security settings are well set according to your needs as a user. At least ensure that few vulnerabilities can be exploited by the threat actors. So if the application is encrypted end-to-end, yes, fine. But ensure you also review these settings as well. Back to you, Mark.
Thanks. So I'm going to go to the country of Jordan next on this, because a personal experience of mine was I was supposed to be on my way to Jordan. And we found out very quickly all travel was basically off. Everything went virtual. And I did a lot of work with Jordan all online. So I'm going to go to Dina and Dr. Ramsey. What are you guys seeing? What would you say to anybody who has to go online and do a large amount of work, file transferring, right, those kinds of things? What are you guys seeing with a lot of the work you are doing in Jordan right now?
Yeah, actually, Mark, there is quite a good tips to follow here in this occasion, especially whenever we are connecting from a wireless network from home. You have multiple devices within your house, smart TVs, many smart devices connected to the internet, which, as Veronica just said, they are unpatched maybe. And it's good to have some sort of proper segmentation within your house. If you can have a dedicated VLAN, virtual LAN, where you can be segmented from all other devices, also for enterprises to enforce their group policy, so that the end user cannot disable their antivirus software, especially that the virus can jump out from one machine to another machine as a worm or malware infection. To steal your critical personal or banking or personal data from those machines. Applying for companies nowadays as all the admins as well is connected to those organizations remotely to make sure that they are using the latest security protocols and techniques with two-factor authentication to access their critical systems, such as cardholder data environment or banking administrative channels through latest protocols such as TLS 1.2 with strong ciphers, in addition to disable all unnecessary services, installing their patches, with critical patches, applicable security patches with 30 days, least applicable security patches within at least a time frame of 40 or 60 days will be a good advice as well. Make sure to implement an EDR technology or host-based IDS to detect any attacks on the endpoint level. And there is a challenge currently to update all this, not only for security patches, but to update the endpoint machines. From antivirus perspective, those machines will not be updated until they come inside the organization, until you will go physically to the LAN over VPN. I don't think many organizations are putting proper security patching for the antivirus. So as far as the antivirus is outside the network, those machines are vulnerable to cyber attacks and the malware infection attacks as well. What do you think, Dina?
Yeah, sorry. Thank you, Dr. Ramsey. I'd like to add to that maybe some basic tips. For example, to require passwords for all meetings, because meeting IDs can be guessed. To lock calls after everyone joins, so when everyone invited joined the meeting, so we can lock the meeting to keep out unknown attendees. We have to be aware of unknown phone numbers, for example, dialing into the conference calls while we are conducting them. It's important to set alert when meetings are forwarded from to another attendees. Also, limiting file sharing in the chat. Always use secure techniques to share files. Don't share them during the chat in a conference call. Thank you.
Oh, makes a lot of sense. Hey, guys. Oh, go ahead, Ramses. You got.
Oh, yeah. I just want to mention something because Veronica was touching on technology. I'm going to build on that because she did great. And Dr. Ramsey was talking about the process and techniques. And then something came to my mind that I think that, again, we need to be, companies should be positively obsessed. Meaning, you know, the cyber criminals, Mark, they have what the acronym on TTPs, tactics, techniques, and procedures. So they have their way in and then stealing credentials and doing vertical attacks or horizontal attacks. Okay, what happened with our TTPs? Okay, I understand that they do. And what happened with us? I mean, don't we have TTPs, tactic, techniques, and procedures? You were mentioning, I mean, the question is tips. Okay, don't you have companies of the world an acceptable use policy? So don't you have something written that tells you and communicates very clearly to employees what you should do, what you shouldn't do, what is politically correct. You know what I mean? So enforce them. That's my tip. The acceptable use policy. And last but not least, and being this a session on cybersecurity, probably most of our attendees today and my fellow panelists, we know the concept of ATPs, Advanced Persistent Threats, okay? APTs is an industry term, okay. What the kerning tells me, Mark, is that, okay, the bad guys, they are very advanced, okay, and persistent. They are very persistent. All right, they give you that. But what happened with our persistence? Meaning, they are advanced and persistent. And we, the world, we, the good guys, shouldn't we be persistent on protection and defense? So in terms of tips, that was the question. You know, I get, again, very excited and passionate on, all right, be persistent, guys. I know it's difficult. I know it gets complicated and it requires money. And there are a couple of questions on budgets. And I understand all that. But then what is the alternative? Not doing it. So just surrender or quitting. So being persistent as well in the, if they are persistent in the attack vector, we need to be persistent in the defense vector, you know? So that came to my mind as Veronica and Dr. Ramsey were mentioning, you know, techniques and procedures and Dina as well. So I wanted to complete that. Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense. Hey, Elaine, I'm going to go back to you before we finish up and then we'll finish up with Alan on this one.
Yeah, my two tips, and I would again come back to this very important point, which is culture and behavior, is to educate the staff. For me, it's the first thing to do. You have some staff, and I don't talk about security teams or IT staff. I talk about all the staff who will now work from home. These guys generally use their own PCs, their own phones. And these phones and these PCs are not secured at all. And these guys are not aware on what to do to work correctly from home. So I saw a few days ago some people using some data which are very well secured in the company working from home. Not from home, actually. It was from a hotspot, which was not protected at all, internet hotspot, no security at all. And the guy said, oh, okay, I need to print some data, and made a copy of data from the company on a USB key and went to a cyber cafe to print the data. So we see that What we can do about all the technical issue will not be sufficient. We can put in place procedures, we can put in place a lot of policies, whatever, but we need to enforce these policies and to make sure that the people are following the rules. So it means train all your staff. This is really very important because generally I work from some very huge company with more than 150,000 people. Imagine how it will cost to train this staff, but we don't have choice because the threat is very, very, very high. So this is my main tip, I would say. And of course, focus on securing remote connections and end-user terminals, of course.
Hey, Alan, back to you.
So, Mark, very briefly, I know we have to move on. Really, two things for me. The first one, we're 2 months into this. A lot of things have had to happen quite quickly. I mean, for example, you know, investment banking, traders, you know, have to trade from home. So before, that was totally non-permissible, you know, so the regulators have made some exceptions. So clearly some things are falling through the gaps here, and there've got to be some compensating controls that have had to be put in place pretty quickly, you know, thin screens, thin clients, etc. So, you know, we need to, organizations need to get on top of all those exceptions that are out there and understand how that affects their risk, their risk appetite, you know, do they need to take immediate action, try and close some of that stuff. You know, totally agree with everybody in terms of awareness and top tips and technical processes. But the other key thing I just want to quickly mention is having a clear understanding of what are those key business processes that you have to have
very solid controls around. I mean, we talk about, you know, using Zoom and all these other conferencing facilities, etc. But, you know, if your finance team just pre-release of financial results are using a Zoom call to talk about the final details before it gets released to the market, you know, that's an absolute, you know, you have to be worried about that. So understand what those key business processes are that you have to have very much locked down under these situations.
So you mentioned compensating controls. So that kind of goes to assurance. And so a lot of folks say, okay, we got cybersecurity. We've talked about privacy. You know, there are folks out there who are independent, right? Organizations and independent professionals trying to provide assurance and do auditing, right? This, now I think auditors probably have one of the toughest jobs right now, because what we've got to do is have an attestation on the state of somebody's security control. So what do you guys think? Would you have any advice for an assurance professional as an auditor around the future of cybersecurity? I'm going to go off to Veronica first, if you don't mind.
Thank you, Mark. My biggest advice here is assurance professionals should be creative. Right now, you need to think outside of the box, because and you also need to understand what you need to do your job. So think of something that may go wrong when people are working from home. Think through your BCPs to ensure that you compare the future of uncertainties, not only just pandemics, keeping in mind that right now we've been so much reliant on third party providers. However, their staff are also working from home right now, and probably their controls have also weakened as well. So you need to be creative, and also have living policies. The policies we used to have before, they are not the same policies that we should use now. Because right now, if you're talking about bring your own device, yes, but now there is another challenge of take our device home. Which policies are working in that area? So we need to consider cybersecurity as part of risk assessment if we are to really conduct a very good audit. And also lock down unmanaged endpoints, because right now, if you try not to look for the bad guys or the vulnerabilities in your network, the bad guys will. So it's up to assurance professionals to ensure that they are vigilant, like Ramsey said earlier, to stay persistent. I'd also like to mention that we need to adopt the attributes of a trusted auditor. These may include ethical resilience. They may include results focus. It does not matter now how big the report you're going to issue is. What matters is the impact that report is going to do to the organization. So consider the aspect of intellectual curiosity when you're carrying out your audits, not just having the ability of just reporting on what happened, but also having the ability to report on why what happened. So assurance professionals right now really have a task to carry out. And also, I'd also recommend them to broaden their skills. I can confidently recommend the ANAISACA certification. It's called a cybersecurity audit. If you can take up that to broaden your skills, it will be awesome. Back to you, Mark.
Great, thank you. Hey, anybody else from the auditing side? Ed, I'm going to close this up with you as a cybersecurity guy specifically, but I want to talk to some of the other assurance professionals out there. What are some challenges? Yeah, I'm an auditor, right? Go for it, OPME.
Okay. All right, so I would just like to advise auditors to be more holistic in their approach. You can borrow from the COVID governance system components. So you're not just focusing on practices, you're also focusing on people, you're focusing on culture, ethics, behavior. You are looking at work products and their effectiveness. You are not just looking at controls in terms of their existence, but in terms of their effectiveness. And that is one tool. You need to be conversant with tools, you know, file integrity monitoring tools, security events and incident management tools, ensuring that they are actually used correctly. Because like the popular saying, a tool in the hands of a fool doesn't change the fool. You know, a fool with a tool is still a fool. So it's not about the tool, it's about how it is used. It's not about the good practices. So good practices are as good as those who practice them. So that is very important to look at the people side of things. Also, understand the improvements in standards. You know, some standards are dated. And it's very important for you to understand, okay, what are the new changes to ISO 27001, what are the supporting standards around that, and so on and so forth. And also, I believe that auditors need to be conscious of the extended enterprise, not just about the organization that you're auditing, but every other interface to it, the suppliers, the vendors, even the homes of the staff. You need to be able to understand and connect all the dots, you know, to be effective, you know, in these times.
All right, good. Hey, Adam, jumping to you as a cybersecurity expert, what would you suggest to an auditor? Any suggestions there? And we're going to move on to the next question.
Biohazard suits, especially for the on-site portion or observations. No, being able to innovate and figure out ways to make sure that you can get the level of assurance that is required to instill confidence in management that says, you know what, we're getting the right information. Not to say that anybody in IT would ever misrepresent data or exclude systems, but we have to be aware of that and not be afraid to push it and say, okay, this data set that you gave me looks a lot like the one from 6 months ago when we were looking at this. So let's dig into a little bit more. Don't be afraid to push IT, even if, during a pandemic, to get us the information we need. We understand that yes, everybody is strapped. Everybody's in a crisis situation. However, we still have a job to do. Their job is to focus on keeping the systems available. From a assurance and audit perspective, you know, I would say adapt to the current environment. If you can't go on site to perform interviews, I heard that they have this thing like Zoom, you may have heard of it, that will allow for telepresence. And I think, Mark, you said something about Fuse. What is this Fuse of which you speak of?
Somebody, one of the panelists brought it up before we jumped on. Was it Ramses talked about it? Yeah.
Well, Fuse is another one of those platforms. We were using it corporately, so on a corporate basis, but we changed to Microsoft Teams. But it's a pretty cool, actually Gartner indicates it's a leader as a magic quadrant in terms of those things that we're using these days, the Zooms and the Teams and the go-to meetings and the WebEx. So for your information, Fuse, I am not endorsing them in any way. I'm just saying that another one to the mix, you know, it's F-U-Z, you know, the last letter of the alphabet, and then E, Fuse. Very interesting. So, but again, it is sanctioned, it is non-sanctioned. Actually, there's a very beautiful question from one of our attendees, if I recall correctly. But the surname, I think it's from Greece, that it's about, you know, are they recorded? The sessions are recorded. Can they use it? Are they encrypted? Then the answer is yes. Are you sure? Then the answer is, well, I don't know, you know? So it's really interesting. All this shift in perception, again, overnight that happened. But yes, that's another one of the tools that are up here.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, you know, when we talk about using these collaboration tools, these are great, but think about it for a moment. Zoom is making a lot of their products for free, as are a lot of different collaboration software. I think Google just made their Hangout or Google Meeting available to anybody at no cost, which immediately tells you, you are the commodity. That means that if you're sharing that information through a collaboration platform such as this, that information is being looked at and analyzed, maybe not by a flesh and blood individual, but it is being looked at. I know we ran a couple of experiments with our Alexa and our Google system, and we started seeing things happen based upon our searches on a system that was independent of the normal home computers. So these companies are processing that data. So be aware and make sure that management's aware that, hey, yes, this is a great platform for us to have and be able to use to be able to conduct interviews. But there's also the case that it's being recorded and analyzed by a third party that we may not want to have it.
All right, guys, we're gonna have to move on here. I just have one final thought on this, and I will tell you that I'm no longer an auditor per se, but I do a large amount of assessments, and I can tell you that within the last couple of months, we had a high degree of confidence that during some of these very, very detailed and very heavy assessments of organizations, just so happened to be in the MENA region, we were able to securely share documents, and I was able to do a complete full assessment, which would be what an auditor would do online, and it actually went very well, and there was a high degree of confidence. So I don't think there's doom and gloom in it, right? I think a lot of good things can happen based on some of the things like Dr. Ramsey said. Hey, here are some technical things you need to think about as well. So now, one of the things I heard a few minutes ago was I kind of heard this term standard, and I heard this term framework kind of sneak out a little bit, because everybody loves, well, you guys know I love frameworks. We'll talk about them a little bit more next week. But to this group, bodies of knowledge, standards, frameworks, where would you be looking right now from a cybersecurity perspective? Because a lot of the folks out there are completely overwhelmed with all of the standards and bodies of knowledge. Where do you as an expert go to find your information? Let's. Oh, sorry about that. I should pick one of you guys out to start with this. Alain, let's start with you.
Okay. So from my point of view, the best one to start with is COVID 2019, because COVID is completely transversal, and cybersecurity, it's not a technical technological issue. So it cannot be limited to IT. So it's definitely not with bodies of knowledge regarding IT that I would go. I like, of course, COVID 2019. And the other one I would like is NIST, because, you know, in Europe and in Africa, we look for ISO 27001. But yes, it's good for big companies. It's good for work which is done inside the company and so on. But right now, with this context, I think the most complete framework is NIST, because it covers all the aspects of cybersecurity. What I would say, a mix of COVID 2019 and NIST.
You know, Elaine, I one of the things I hear about NIST as well, even though it's a North America kind of thing, we're seeing it globally. But one of the things I really like about NIST and a lot of my clients, it's free. It's free out on the site. Again, I'll put a shameless plug in for NIST, because I love the documentation, the CSF, the cybersecurity mm-hmm. framework, the special publications. I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that is growing in popularity just because it's open and NIST wants to share this as much as possible.
Yeah, totally agree with you.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, Dina, what are you guys seeing out the in MENA from a frameworks perspective?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, here I'd like to refer to two types of certifications or references in this area, some of them for the individuals themselves and others for the organizations. Talking about the for individuals, I agree with Alan on COBIT. So having COBIT foundation, implementation, design, or even the assessor is very important to build your governance system and have the cybersecurity as a focus area within that governance system. I'd like also to refer to the ISACA CSX Cybersecurity Fundamental Certificate, which is very, very important for beginners and practitioners, for fresh graduates also, to build their knowledge of cybersecurity and get started in this field. Another certification for cybersecurity practitioner certificate from ISACA also. This one is a very good one, because it works on the skills in live protected environment to get new skills in that field. Also, I'd like to refer to BSI, Lead Auditor, Lead Implementer, are really important in this area. One more thing is to have good hands on cybersecurity attacks, labs, and scenarios. I'd like to leave it to Dr. Ramsey maybe for other frameworks that are good for organizations to adopt and work on.
You have mentioned Mark and Alan COBIT 2019 for capability assessment and as well NIST core security framework for as well maturity assessment to do alignment with your cybersecurity resilience program and your governance tailored system in place. We may also adopt something called a combined approach to also refer to international standards such as the payment card industry data security standard, PCI-DSS recent release for securing the payment systems from cyber attacks and cyber criminals. In addition, we may also use tips and interesting controls from EU GDPR for privacy data, for maintaining and protecting privacy data. For banking data, especially for transactional data, we may also refer to SWIFT customer security program, which is a very good reference that also are linked to ISO 27001 and to 27017 for cloud assets as well. So a combined approach among all those standards and frameworks will be an added value for the organizations to rebuff all cyber criminals attacks against their organizations.
Good to know. Alan, off to you.
Yeah, so I totally agree with my colleagues there in terms of your certifications and tools, et cetera. But I want to just briefly mention three that I find very useful. And, you know, again, it's free, it's open source out there. So the OWASP, you know, top 10 application security risks, that is updated on a regular basis. That's a really good source to turn to. You know, it's all about find those broken windows and fix those broken windows. So get the basics right. And OS also has a very good resource, top 10 proactive controls. So again, focusing on the top stuff. And then the Center for Internet Security has those 20 cybersecurity controls. And there is some overlap there with NIST and with COBIT and with OS and that. But again, it's a nice source of reference. So those are the Center for Internet Security, 20 cybersecurity controls. And it also has actually a very good resource I found is the CIS configuration benchmarks. So you can go for, you know, infrastructure, whether it's mobiles or Unix servers or Linux, etc. It gives you some of those things that you need to absolutely have right as fundamentals in terms of configuration. You know, often you hear small organizations ask, you know, how do I configure a mobile phone, or, you know, what's the best security configuration for a particular, you know, endpoint, etc. Have a look at those CSS configuration benchmarks. And then finally, the Security Institute, Security Engineering Institute also has a baseline of 11 cyber hygiene practices. You know, those are all tools that I find very useful, and I would kind of call them out.
That's great. So one of the things that when you start talking frameworks, Dina had mentioned a little bit about certifications and those kinds of things. The top certs out there right now, right? You got CISSP, right? I'm just bringing these up. You've got ISACA has some certifications. We heard Dina mention CSX. From a cybersecurity perspective, if I were listening to global experts say, hey, if I were you, right, here's the cert I'd be running after right now from either a knowledge perspective or a career perspective. What are the top certs? You guys go for it.
I think the thing I'm seeing in terms of certifications, at least where I live, most of the certifications are only available in English. So having them available in local languages is a huge advantage, and especially when working with the government. And CISA is available in many local languages as a result.
And COBIT is also in your native language. And you probably
had the team that translated it. So, thank you. Thanks for the plug, Mark. I appreciate that. You can have a lot of great certifications, but if they're not available in the local language, they don't do anybody any good in my mind. And COBIT and CISA are, I think, 27001 as well as available in the local language. The Germans have something called Grundschutz, which is great, but it's only available in German and English, unfortunately. It's like more than 2,000 pages of densely written, you know, hardening scripts for various infrastructure, various kinds of infrastructure. It's very powerful, but it's not available in my local language.
Veronica, to you.
Yes, I would, thank you, Mark. Right now, my favorite is CISA, of course. And I would recommend COBIT 2019. And lastly, I would still recommend the cybersecurity audit. Yes, Back to you, Mark.
I would say from my perspective, of course, I'm not as deep in cybersecurity as many of you folks are, but my feeling has always been is risk is an underlying factor to anything. And one of my favorite certifications that I hold is C-Risk, personally, C-Risk and C-Guide. Of course, this is not just pushing ISOCA certifications, but those are two that personally I feel have helped me a lot on the cybersecurity side, COVID as well. Look, we're going to move on here in a few minutes. Anybody else out there, any other good suggestions on top frameworks or top certifications that you would be looking at?
Mark, I would like to have 1 minute to say, I mean, all of the things that my colleagues have just said are absolutely clear. You know, CSX from ISACA and some of the ones you mentioned, they have an angle on security, cybersecurity, C-Risk or C-Guide in order to operational levels, agreements, etc. However, I'm going to get a step back forward, meaning choose the one. I mean, the market is huge, but choose the one that fits your career path, not just your actual job, which is great, fantastic, but not just the one that suits your willingness of learning today. Great, fantastic. But you mentioned, actually, you mentioned it yourself, your career path, your actual or your next move. I mean, the market is huge, CISSP, and there are many others, you know, and depending on the depth on your knowledge, because some people here might be technical, some people coming maybe from law. I mean, the digital lawyer, so he's not necessarily a technician, but it has to do, am I right, with the protection and privacy, etc. So although all of my colleagues were great, I would say I have to choose the one that fits my career move. Sometimes it's a straightforward career move, sometimes a lateral career move. So that has to be, or my goal was an inspiration. I'll try to make an inspirational answer, meaning define your next version of yourself, you know, if it's cybersecurity or it's auditing cybersecurity or it's managing cybersecurity or cybersecurity from a practitioner perspective. And then you will go with CSX, the foundations, or you go to an expert or go to another one. So that would be a nice approach, you know, food for thought. Define your next version of yourself, and then boom, then move. So that would be great. Yeah.
Awesome advice. And on that positive note, you guys know an hour and a half goes by pretty quick. I'm going to go around the table. Everyone out there, give us your quick down and dirty. What you would have for your top suggestions when it comes to our listeners about focusing now on cybersecurity to prepare for this, if it even exists, a post-pandemic advice. Elaine, I'll start with you. We'll go to Ed next.
Okay, so my three top advices would be, first of all, appoint somebody who is accountable for the security, so for the information security. And this person must be at the right level, meaning at the executive committee at least, and have the right skills. So appoint a CISO. Security is larger than the domain of IT. So it's definitely not the place in IT to put the responsibility of cybersecurity. This is very important. It must be transversal and take into account people, HR, finance, everything. Second advice, focus on awareness, cybersecurity awareness training for your people, all your staff, because the threat is everywhere and everybody in the company is responsible for the security of the company. And third one, focus on remote working. Things have changed. And now you must, if you didn't have this already in place, put the efforts on policies, procedures, tools, everything to ensure that the end users' terminals, PCs are secure.
Very good. Thank you. Excellent stuff there. Hey, Ed, to you next. Kaya, you're on deck.
Thank you. Yeah, to follow up with Elaine, yeah, the workforce aspect is going to be what I'm going to be most looking at, specifically that data that was created while the folks were working at home and they were off network. To go with Kipling's serving seven honest men, I want to know the who, where, why, what, why, when, how that data was created, why it was created, how it's going to play in. I think that's going to be one of the big things that I'm going to be concerned about. The other aspect is looking at those potential incidents that may have occurred during the pandemic that we have to respond to. The loss of a device, whether that's through somebody spilling their drink on your laptop, and I'm looking at my son Spencer, because we just had that discussion not too long ago, or somebody losing a thumb drive that had that company data on it when they were gone. Getting control back around that data, and I know I'm probably going to not make any friends when I say the importance cannot be stressed enough about having a current accurate data inventory and knowing what's in your environment. And right now it used to be our environment was inside four walls on our corporate networks. Now our data is well beyond that, and it's in our employees' homes on multiple different types of devices, on infrastructure that we do not control as an enterprise.
That's right. You got it. That's good stuff. Ed, thank you very much. Kai, to you. Ramses, you'll be next.
I think the main thing I see is getting upper management support for any security initiative. Upper management accesses the most valuable data assets in the organization. And there we have a saying in Turkey, you know, the fish smells from the head first. If upper management isn't adhering to security norms, we can't expect anybody else to do it. There's a lot of, most of the companies where I live are structured as there's a single major investor that runs the organization. So like we call them patron companies. You got to get the patron to be on board with this stuff and be willing to do it. If they don't, nobody in the company is going to do it.
Yep, makes a lot of sense. Kaya, thank you. Ramses, to you. Dina, you're on deck.
Thank you, Mark. You know, my comment, and I guess I said it on last week on as the closing comment, but I'm gonna say the same. Those are exceptional times, and that requires exceptional measures. I mean, we need to be on our A game more than ever. So these are times to show leadership. You know, the people that are hearing us and sharing with us today through the questions, etc. At the end of the day, they know cybersecurity and assurance, and they know common sense, and you know, and they know law, and they know legislation, regulation, privacy. You know, so combine all that in order to what? To protect and defend any industry, any vertical, any geography. At the end of the day, whether if it's retail, telco, healthcare, at the end of the day, this is the game. The name of the game is protect and defend. So show your leadership, show the best auditor you can be, the best purchasing manager you can be, the best cybersecurity director you can be, because this is required. The bad guys are not going to stop because of the COVID-19, quite on the contrary. So we shouldn't be stopping and being showing leadership and thinking certification, thinking frameworks, thinking governance, thinking cybersecurity, because of COVID-19, quite on the contrary. Show leadership, use technology. Technology can certainly help. Alan was mentioning compensating controls. Okay, great. But also detective controls and preventative controls and corrective controls. I mean, the book has been written. The book has been written. So use it to the best of your authority and ability. That's
got it. I love the book has been written. Actually, I think we start with that quote next Wednesday, because we're going to be talking about these on frameworks. Man, that is actually, that's a quotable quote. The book has been written, right? I totally agree. Hey, absolutely. Dina, thank you, Ramses. Dina, we'll go to you. Dr. Ramsey, you'll be up next after Dina. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mike. Three tips: continue to assess the risks. In post-pandemic environment, we have to focus on the more risky activities, especially the ones that are related to working from home. The next tip is to be ready to respond. We have to make sure that all the users report immediately any incidents, even if they are working from home. Ensure they are aware of the organization incident response plan and how to report incidents, even if they are working remotely. The third tip is to adjust our cybersecurity strategies directly after the pandemic period to ensure that they are ready to respond to any challenges, just like the ones that we already faced during the pandemic period. Thank you.
Mark, you're muted.
You're on mute, Mark.
Mark, you're on mute.
I'm brand new at Zoom. Dr. Ramsey, you're next, followed by Alan.
All right, Mark. Actually, the world is changing after COVID-19. Now, the majority of enterprises and banks, especially in the Middle East, are moving to digital transformation programs, digital channels, self-deployed systems, online boarding systems as well, which will open a new, possibility for potential attackers to launch some sophisticated attacks against them. And eventually, the recommendation will be for those organizations is to adopt threat intelligence and malware hunting technologies, in addition to go for security operations center orchestration techniques, which will help to identify, detect, protect, and respond to cyber incident without manual or human intervention, to detect any malicious patterns and to be one step ahead hackers and potential intruders.
Awesome. No, that's very, very awesome. Great stuff. Alan, to you. OPM, you're next.
Yeah, so great opportunity for ensuring that cybersecurity is really integrated into the enterprise. So where those key business decisions are being made, you know, make sure cyber has a seat at that table. And, you know, following on from that, we've been through, you know, business resilience. Really important that we understand those key business processes, those critical business processes, and align to that, those critical business assets as well. And then finally, you know, great opportunity improving our cyber posture by investing in skills, invest in our people, our existing people, skills development, those competencies, ensure that we're spending this time to invest in our people. And then finally, just be nice to ourselves and to others.
That last one is probably the best advice, but I think the investing in skills, what's interesting is there's an explosion in online asynchronous training right now. So that's a really good market. But be nice to each other. That's probably one of the best pieces of advice I've ever heard. Honestly. Thank you, Alan. OPM to you. We'll close up with Veronica.
All right. Thank you. A quote comes to mind that says that culture eats strategy for lunch. We can focus on cybersecurity strategy and all of that, but I think culture is very important. And it's very important that we adopt a culture of continual improvement. And that's why I like ISO standards, because that's the emphasis. Like 27001 talks about 114 controls that you need to put in place for your organization and then continually improving around that. This is important because if you are not intentionally improving, you are unintentionally declining. So you can't just stay on one spot. So that culture is very important. So improving it, everything, subject everything to improvement, your people, your practices, your tools, subject everything to improvement. And I think that you get there. Thank you.
You got it. That's perfect. All right, Veronica, let's finish up with you. We'll close this out.
Thank you, Mark. What I would like us to watch out for is the cyber fatigue risk. As much as we are preaching, creating awareness, educating our users, let us not forget that systems are stressed, networks are stressed, and so are the users. So with this in mind, I would like to say something on a psychological aspect and welfare, that right now people are worried of where the next paycheck is coming from. So the desperation surrounding this lockdown, the pay cut, the layoffs, is creating opportunities for hackers to manipulate employers to even lose their integrity. I'm not advocating for the bad guys, but remember, any information that is leaked right now, it can potentially translate into money. And this doesn't sound like a breakfast for the business. So assessors should ensure that we have the ability to monitor insider threats, the trends of insider threats, and be able to detect anomalies in real time before they happen. My colleagues have already mentioned about the refreshing the cybersecurity strategy. It is key. Because security right now is not about protecting people in the streets. It's about protecting people who have been forced to go digital. And the bad guys have also gone digital. So what does that mean to businesses? We need to reconsider. We need to refresh our plans. And we can do better. Let us be persistent. with achieving this. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you very much. And I think a common theme here, and I think back to something that a good colleague of ours, Ed McCabe, said in our first webinar. He said, be prepared to defend your decisions that you're making during this pandemic. And so that means you need to make the right decisions. Don't knee-jerk reaction. And Ed, I've actually quoted you for the last week on that. Be prepared to defend yourself, because so you don't want to go too far, you don't want to go too less, but you want to keep privacy in mind, cybersecurity, protection of critical information of the enterprise. So guys, that went very, very fast. Thank you so much for that. I do need to let everybody know the panelists have been very patient with me. I lost my communication mechanism on the back end. I have not had chat capability. So these guys ran with this thing and I couldn't see. They're probably saying bad things about me on chat right now. However, I will have this fixed next week. And next week, this is one of my favorite topics. Join us next week. We're talking about IT governance systems. This is a great way for us to wrap up all the things we've talked about between privacy and cybersecurity. We're going to talk about your governance system, governance, risk, compliance, cybersecurity, right? How, as a professional, how do you put these things into a single page? And that's almost impossible to do, but I'm going to ask the folks on this panel to put an IT governance system somehow in an hour and a half on a single page for us so you guys can get some value out of that. Wednesday, 27th of May, most of you guys are probably already signed up for that. If not, keep an eye on your social media, because I can guarantee you everybody out here on this panel is going to be posting their information out on their social media, Twitter, as well as LinkedIn. You can find their information out on the cover page that has everybody's their face shots and all the information about that. Hey, feel free to follow each one of these folks. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your kind attention as we went 6 minutes too late. We'll try to do better next time, and have a great week, everyone. Be safe. And in the words of Alan Boardman, be kind to each other. Have a great week, everyone.